And here we go. Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, friends and rivals. My name is Jared, and with me is the mother of my children, Anna.
Hello, I'm the mother of Jared's children.
We will be your hosts for the episode. Unfortunately, between school starting and soccer starting up and sickness and getting ready for a trip to Disney, the kids are not available for this episode.
The kids need to sleep.
So we will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, though, we're going to set aside the individual review and have a discussion about getting kids into gaming.
Because we all know that you have kids that you hope grow up to play games.
Yeah, whether they're your kids or a friend's kids or some kid on the street.
Neighbor's kids.
Somebody.
Grandkids.
You want to
nieces
play games
and nephews.
Eventually.
We need to share the joy of gaming with all children, basically, is what we're saying.
That is what we're saying.
Yep. So here's how to do it.
Oh, wow. At least in our own personal experience. Not the only way.
Okay, fine. Please comment if you have other ways that you have found that are effective for getting children into gaming other than bribing them.
Perfect. All right, we'll let the intro music run out and we'll discuss. Because, like, the intro music playing through all of that.
And yeah, then, I know, but why are you saying that?
Well, how would you wrap it up?
I don't know.
All right, then.
I'd just say, so here we go.
Crushed it.
Crushed it.
All right. Anna?
Yes, Jared?
Ian and I have already kind of given this answer, and I think you have a little bit, but not really. Give us your background on how you got into tabletop gaming.
All right. Well, so I have to say there wasn't a time in my life where I didn't play games. There was a time in my life where I didn't play popular games, maybe.
Hmm. Okay.
So, but my family always played really classic games. I remember I was, goodness, like 5 years old, and we had this card game 4-in-1 that had Old Maid and Go Fish, and you know, you did the memory tile matching game, and I think we had Candyland, Chutes and Ladders, mm-hmm. for sure. We actually had an Australian version of Chutes and Ladders called Snakes and Ladders for a little while, because I lived in Australia when I was 5 years old. And when I got back to the U.S. and the Snakes and Ladders game broke, and I was like, we need to get new Snakes and Ladders. And Mom was like, sorry, they don't have Snakes and Ladders here. And I was like, what? No, and she's like, no, that's just called Chutes and Ladders. And I was like, but snakes are so much cooler.
What's a chute?
Why would we go down slides? Yeah. That's not even scary. You know, in the Snakes and Ladders, you really didn't want to slide down the snake because then you'd, like, snakes
you
are bad.
Bit.
You get bit at the end. I know. I don't know. Why,
I mean,
America.
Australians just go more hardcore
That's
than
right.
the
Apparently
Americans do. That makes
do.
Sense.
Or I don't know. I could be completely remembering this wrong, and Snakes and Ladders was like an old version of that game everywhere. I don't know. But this is my childhood memory we're talking about. So we're going.
It is your truth.
We're going with it. It's my truth. That's right. And then when we got a little bit older, we played Monopoly a lot. There were so many evenings when I went to bed crying because of Monopoly. Because my dad always won, but it would always take him, you know, like 3 hours to win. And after you were completely ground into the ground and all of your properties were mortgaged, and then he would want the game to keep going on longer. He's like, well, what if you just sell me your mortgage properties and then I'll give you a little bit more money to continue, you know, treading water. And yeah, so it's just kind of a family bonding experience. I will say this. We played a lot of games growing up, and I played a lot of games with my dad. I remember playing checkers almost nightly with my dad. I remember games of Risk that we would start and just kind of leave set up, and they would go all weekend long. And we would just play this epic days long games of Risk because Risk takes a while. So we'd be called to lunch, we'd be called to this or that, and you know, and that would kind of happen. We played Spades
yep.
and Hearts. And when we got a little bit older, more like high school or so, I was in high school. My brothers were more like middle school. We were taught bridge because my dad knew how to play bridge. My grandma was in bridge club, you know, like grandmas do sometimes. And so then we'd play bridge as a family. Anyway, I gamed a lot. It was very fun. And so it was an easy transition to get into some of the more popular games, themed games, those kinds of things, because I already enjoyed gaming, even just the basic ones that you do with cards. So, yeah. Oh, we played Hand and Foot, too.
Yeah, it's like the less fun version of Canasta.
It's like the harder version of Canasta. Canasta is like the easy version of Hand and Foot, is what you're saying.
Oof.
Yeah. And, oh, and we played Bluet, which is really similar to...
Farkle.
Farkle, that's right. But I frankly think that Farkle riffed off of Bluet because...
Probably.
Yeah. So, anyway, does that answer your question, Jared?
I think so. I think the only thing in there that I was looking for is... I think you knew about Catan before I was introduced to it.
I was introduced to Catan one weekend when we went to some friend's house that lived in Chattanooga, and they introduced me to Catan. It was probably high school or so. And it was...
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was pretty on down the line that I got introduced to Catan. And
sure.
I don't even remember the next popular type game that I got introduced to after Catan. Because it was Catan and it was just Catan for a while. And, you know, you'd go to people's houses and they'd have expansions for Catan and that maybe Munchkin in college.
Yeah, that was a thing for a long time.
Several people were into Munchkin, so we did that for a little while.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that answers it. I mean, I was really just kind of curious to be able to get your background on all things gaming in younger Anna's life.
Younger Anna's life, yep.
Very fascinating.
I even went back for Monopoly, so you can tell I've got kind of a high tolerance for games.
Yeah, the fact that you played Monopoly multiple times.
Multiple times. And then my brothers and I would set it up, and we would go over and over, like, strategies. Like, what if this had happened, or what if that had happened, and how can we beat Dad? Because, oh, so I didn't even finish that thought earlier.
That's true.
But that was the cool thing about my dad, is he played games with us all the time.
Sure.
But I never felt like he was going easy on us. So it always felt like it was a challenge. It was something we had. I remember the first time I beat my dad at checkers, he beat me for years at checkers every single time. And we would play literally nightly sometimes. It would be like a thing we'd do before we went to bed. And the first time I beat him was like, I have turned a new chapter in my life kind of thing. I was on cloud nine for like 3 days. And then it was like a while before one of my brothers beat him. And then it was like we two were in this, like, we beat Dad at checkers one time
right.
club. Like, it was very fun. So there was that. My dad went hardcore with games, but I think that also, because of the relationship that I had with him, in addition to him crushing me in Monopoly,
sure.
It made me try hard and learn good strategy instead of just being allowed to win.
That is very interesting. And I think we can get into that a little bit later, because I think there's a couple of different approaches to that.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
So we can talk about that as we go. But we do get this question a lot. We have three girls, ages 8, 6, and 4. Happy birthday to Faith, as this is coming out. Her birthday is tomorrow.
Yep. So she's not quite 8 yet.
You're right. She's got a couple days to go.
Even though she's been telling people she's 8 for about 2 months now.
Well, and she's almost 13, she said. So, yeah.
Math. It's a struggle. It's,
you know, perspective and all that.
There you go.
But, no, so we obviously, all three of our girls are really into gaming. They've loved it so much that they're willing to talk about it on a podcast once a month. Obviously, we've invested a lot of time in this. And so people will say, how do you get your kids into gaming? Do you have suggestions for me? We have family members who are starting to have kids. They're like, hey, what did you do? So on and so forth. And so with the kids not being available for this month, we thought this would be a good time to go ahead and have this discussion. I will go ahead and give a couple of disclaimers. First off, this is going to be primarily geared towards younger kids. One, that's the stage that we're in. But two, I think once you're in the middle school, high school range, if you're trying to introduce them into games, I think it's a little bit of a different approach than it is with younger kids. And so, you're giving me the signal you have a thought on that.
Well, please. You finish your sentence first.
No. I mean, that was kind of it. Like, I think that there is value that you can get from this episode, but, and I'll kind of mark where I think that is by just saying, hey, pay attention here for middle and high schoolers as well. But no, I mean, like I said, I think there are two very different approaches there.
I agree. I think that if you're looking at getting a middle or high school kid to play board games with you, that's going to be similar to getting an adult who wants to play board games with
sure.
you. Because a middle or high schooler, you're not going to have to find a game that scales down to them. And that's the biggest question we get is, how in the world are you playing games with your two-year-old? She can't conceptualize Catan or read yet or have a attention span longer than 30 seconds.
Right.
So how are you doing that? And we were playing games with our children, actual board games with our children, from about 18 months onward.
Yeah.
And we would get questions like this, like, how in the world are you playing board games with your kids and they're 2 years old? Because you've got to scale the games. And that's what we're going to talk about. But if you get to middle or high school level, the kid knows how to read. The kid knows basic strategy. At that point in time, you're more just going to be looking at their interests and the types of games that are going to appeal to them, similarly to what you would do when you're having a friend over for a game night.
Right.
You're going to think, okay, they're going to want something a little bit longer or shorter or party-ish or high strategy, low strategy, and that would be more the approach to take with older kids. But again, I think some of this can still apply to older kids, and you can still benefit from some of the strategies that we're going to talk about as well.
No, for sure. Like I said, it's just going to be a little bit, just understand where we're primarily coming from, but there will be spots for you as well. All right, with all of that, our first games with our kiddos.
Very first game.
Go ahead.
Was Candyland.
It was.
Every single one. It was so easy. They just had to know their colors.
Yep.
And well, and they had to know how to follow a path, which some of them they'd be
that
like,
actually,
oh, here's a red. And they'd like just skip across the board. So you had to show them, wait, here, like they had to like learn how to take their finger and kind of follow the path till they came to the next red and then put their piece on the next red. So that was a skill that they learned through Candyland.
Yep. Yeah. There was a lot of just learning the basic structure of the path and how there were a couple of things on the board that could cheat the path, but primarily this is the path that you had to take. And so that was the big learning curve. It's one of the big things that Candyland is used for, is to teach, this is the basic structure of how a game works.
Yep.
And there is going to be a winner and there's going to be losers and we're going to have fun along the way, which a two-year-old will, because it's just bright colors and candy and hanging out with the fam, which is what they want to do.
Right. I mean, it's kind of cool. I mean, you could beat a two-year-old and they wouldn't even know that you beat them.
Yeah.
As long as you just let them keep playing till they get to the end.
That's
they
right.
think it's awesome.
Absolutely. It's a thing where you want them to complete the game so that they can understand the structure of it. But, you know, if they, it's also something where if they are starting to lose interest, you don't have to force it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can just be done and that's okay because they've had a good time with it. Winning and losing is not really the major thing that we have found that works there. It's just teaching the structure.
Yeah. And it was a special thing where they got to spend time with us. I'd say, hey, I think you're ready for your first board game.
Yep.
And to be honest, like I said, I think we started them all at Candyland about 18 months and they couldn't say the names of their colors. They didn't even really know their colors. But if I took a red card and I put it next to the board and I said, hey, we're looking for this color, they could color match at 18 months. And it also helped them learn their colors.
That's right. Now, I will say this, and I'm speaking to my hardcore gamers who are listening.
Who are groaning inside the idea of playing Candyland.
They've already died at the word Candyland. I get it. It's not a hardcore game. You're right. I have not thrown my two-year-old into Twilight Imperium and expected them to move their factions all over the board. It just doesn't work that way. I kind of treated Candyland the same way I did when I bought Faith her first Lego set. I sat down with her. I walked through each page with her. I took all the pieces, found them for her, and laid them out in a line and said, this is how you're going to build this, and sat there with her while she did it. So yes, it's not the most exciting thing for the adult, but I do think that when you lay the foundation and you build that structure, what I have found now seeing my 8-year-old playing games and my 6-year-old playing games and even my 4-year-old playing games, they see patterns and understand structure of games so much better because of starting with Candyland and some other basic games that we're going to talk about.
Yep.
That's all I'm going to say. So I know you're dying inside. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm happy that my Candyland days are over. But I would do it again if I had to.
Yeah, think of it like building a building from the foundation up.
You're
building something with Candyland. It's not the end.
So Candyland, Chutes and Ladders, even Go Fish.
Memory game. I mean, the
memory
tile,
games.
Like those are good when they're really, really young.
Yep. There's some.
So memory game is nice because you can start with as little as like 6 tiles. You know, something super basic and they can build up from there, which is nice.
Yep. We're going to mention a couple of publishers later and they're going to have some games that I would say are similar to Candyland that you could get instead. I think they do something similar, but that's just how we started, was with Candyland itself. And I already knew about the publishers that I'm going to mention. So just take that for what it is. Anna, any other thoughts on our basic Candyland starting point?
Yeah, just thinking about the structure of gaming that Jared was talking about, the Candyland taught. I think another thing that it taught was turn order. That was an interesting thing.
That's
true. Is the kids would want to just keep drawing cards. We'd have to say, no, it's my turn. Or, you know, once there was a sister involved, it was now it's her turn, now it's your turn. And turn taking was something it took a little bit for them to get used to, but also a good gaming component. And there were some other games we played also when they were younger that taught other things. Like there was one that taught a little bit more of a cooperative aspect to gaming. There was one that taught a little bit of you're having to collect pieces, and so you kind of collected your own little stash, like your little kind of kingdom building game. Mm-hmm. Very basic. You're
that's
just
okay.
collecting fruit, but yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the goal of those early games, is you're teaching gaming components.
The structure and the components.
And structure.
And, yep.
And you're framing gaming as, this is a fun thing that we get to do together.
Yes.
That's what's going to make them love gaming, is that it's a fun family thing that we get to do together.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen that across the board throughout our entire gaming time with the kids. Is they just want to do it with us.
Yep.
So, all right. We're going to move in to things to focus on when you're looking at various games that might or might not work for you. Now, obviously, the first thing I would recommend is that you go back and check out our previous Kids Table episodes, because we try to go in depth on each of the games that we review. And hopefully that helps you figure some of that out. But if you're shopping on your own, some of the things that we try to pay attention to, the first one is theme.
Definitely.
So obviously, theme is something that you think about for all your entertainment. I'm not going to give my kids a racing book if they don't care about racing. In the same way, I'm probably not going to make them play a racing game if they don't want anything to do with racing.
But man, when they were 3 years old, anything we gave them that had Star Wars on it, even though they'd never seen Star Wars, they were like, well, Dad likes Star Wars, so therefore anything Star Wars related is awesome.
That's right.
So, of course, we got that Chewbacca racer instead of, what game was that patterned off of?
It was
of?
Off of Lupin Louie.
Oh, yeah. So it was like this Chewbacca Lupin Louie. They played that over and over again just because it was Star Wars. So it was cool.
Yeah, it's true. Like they would ask me, they're like, who's in the Millennium Falcon? And what's the Millennium Falcon? And they would ask me things like that.
Yeah.
And then it was fun. Yeah. So, I mean, things like that, Star Wars, there's all kinds of, geez, just go to the Target game aisle and you're going to find all kinds of IPs slapped onto these different games. So, you know, if like you're into Pokemon or whatever it may be, there's something out there in those brands. Or even if it's not a specific IP, one I'm thinking about that we're going to mention, Unicorn Glitterlock.
I was thinking about that one too.
Yeah, like our girls went through, they still kind of are, a phase of like unicorns all the time everywhere.
Yep.
And so we happened to find a game that had a lot of unicorns and we're like, okay, let's try it. And it ended up being a big hit because it was unicorns. And sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking even the Paw Patrol game where it's pretty basic. You're just following a path. You're collecting the badges from each of the pups.
I mean, it is Candyland just in Paw Patrol
form. It is
form.
Candyland. Well, except for when you collect the badges, they're the things that let you break the rules. You don't get to break the rules unless you have the badge. It's a tiny extra component.
That's fair.
But basically, it is Candyland. But because it was Paw Patrol, they wanted to play it all the time for a while because, hey, I mean, who doesn't love Paw Patrol? Nobody in this house.
Nobody in this house. That's for sure.
That's right.
That's for sure. So that's theme. Definitely want to keep that in mind, just like you do with anything else with entertainment, like I said. Next is specific interests that might pull in a child. So one game that we've already talked about on the podcast before is the Kids Chronicles game.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that Faith, in particular, would love this game for two reasons. It was all about going through a story and solving the mystery, which she was starting to read at that point when we found it, and she loved mysteries. And two, it had an app. And so I knew that Faith getting to operate the app was going to be everything that she wanted to have.
Yep.
And sure enough, she asks to play that game all the time. And so I just think that, you know, knowing what your kids are interested in, whether it's something like tying an app in, or if it's competitive versus cooperative, I don't know. I know some of my kids would rather play a cooperative game, and other ones would be much more into playing a competitive game because they want to win.
Yep.
And so learning that about your own child, I think, is also very important.
Yeah. And so as you're listening to this, you might start thinking about things that are appealing to your children. And I'd say, so the app really drew Faith in, the story drew Faith in. I feel like Joy is drawn in by the artwork in games a lot. She likes the fantasy component artwork in games. And so she's been drawn a lot. So it's interesting. That's a harder theme to pick up on with a kid a little bit. But we were starting to notice certain ones were like, oh. And so now we can pretty much say like, oh my goodness, this is this, what's the dragon one? Dragomino that she loves, because you're making this beautiful terrain and collecting baby dragons. I mean, what's not to love about that? And so, yeah, so that was an interesting thing to notice, is that she's drawn to beautiful fantasy artwork in the game. And so we can pick things like that for her.
Yep, I completely agree. Another thing to think about of drawing an interest, and I know this one's a little bit tougher, but it's something I thought about. Specific mechanics tied to either the way your kid thinks or their interests or things like that. So if your child is really clumsy and does not have a lot of good hand-eye coordination, you may not want to do a dexterity game, or you might to use it as a practice tool. So that's something to think about. On the other hand, learning the different ways that kids think can help me figure out if they're going to like a certain kind of game. So like, for example, Joy is really good with pattern recognition. And so when we play fast games, like either Match Madness or something like that, like the Magnifix, she loves those.
Yeah.
Where you're putting together a pattern as quick as possible. Or the desserts game, I forget what it's called, but there's a desserts one that does something similar. But basically, you know, it's one of those where you have to look at the board, find the pattern, make it as fast as possible. First one to do it wins. Joy loves those. And that's just because that's the way her brain works. Faith gets frustrated as all get out.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting seeing the different ways that they operate in that space. And so that's another thing that you can consider as well when looking at your interests or your child's interest for a game.
When we talk about games, even with the adult podcast, we'll talk about, oh, this is a little bit more of a social game. This is a social deduction game. This is a kingdom building game, a pattern recognition game, a more strategy, this and that. You can draw those categories with kids' games too.
Yeah.
You can say, this is more dexterity. This is more pattern recognition. This is a little bit more social. There's some social components to this game. This is, you know, figuring out a mystery. And so then you can take those things and you can apply them to things that you feel like your kid would enjoy. And you can present it to them that way too. Like, hey, I got this game because I know that you are so good at building things, and this is a game about building things. And I think that's going to make them want to play it more, because they know that it's specifically tailored to them because of something that you notice and appreciate about them. And who doesn't love that?
Absolutely.
Another thing to keep in mind is when you're talking about younger kids, younger kids can read yet. There was a point where all of us could not read.
It's true.
Let me start that over.
No, that was good.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was. I love it.
No. Okay. All right, fine. And so when you're choosing a game, you want to be conscious of how much text there is or how much reading is required, because a kid's going to want to feel like they're playing the game themselves and not like you're just reading the card and telling them what to do. I remember the Toy Story game that we got.
Yeah, this is the one I was thinking of too.
Was right after she learned how to read. And so we thought, okay, she's ready for something that's a little bit more text-based. And so the Toy Story game we bought her, you're playing through different Toy Story scenarios. So it's kind of legacy-ish. And so there's a little bit of text to read on the cards, so you know what they do. And I remember the first few games you played with her took such a long time because she was an emerging reader, but that meant it took a very long time for her to read. There were still certain aspects you had to read with her. So that's just something to keep in mind, because if you're in a place where you're having to take your kids' cards and just read them all for them, that's not going to make your kid feel like they're participating as much in the game as...
Well, I will say, though, okay. So there is, I felt like it did take a lot longer. Toy Story was a lot of work, but I did also feel like it paid off because Faith was learning some other gaming, and I'm putting that in quotation marks, mechanics, like the deck building, making the choices. So what I would do, and this is part of why it would take forever, I would read off several of the cards and say, okay, Faith, these are your choices. What do you want? Which one do you want to buy? How do you want to play it? And let her make the decision. So there was still a payoff there, and it's really easy to do in a co-op. You know, if you're playing competitively, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah, the Toy Story game was a co-op deck builder, which was kind of unique, but it's because you're playing against the scenario.
Right. So I think there is value in that if it's teaching other things, but if reading is the primary thing that you're trying to get the kid to figure out, then you want to make sure that it's within age appropriate for that amount of text. And Toy Story was a little bit ahead of what Faith was at for herself in as far as reading skill level.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it helped her. She did continue to enjoy it as she got better and better at reading. And, you know, by the end of a year or so, she was going through scenarios on her own with her sisters and reading their cards for them. And I think another thing to be aware of with text-based stuff is how much of the game is text-based. Because when we did the Chronicles of Light game, that was one of the things that we were conscious of with Joy, is there was cards and there's things to read. And so we said, does that make you feel like you didn't get to participate as much? Because sometimes when they're playing a game and Faith is reading all the Toy Story cards for her, that's what she says. Like, Faith just made all the decisions for me and I didn't get to do anything. But because there were other aspects to the game, there's moving around a board and collecting components around the board, she didn't care that we had to read some cards for her. So that's something to balance, maybe ask your kid about, especially if they're a non-reader, because there are plenty of games that do not require a lot of text on cards.
Sure.
That we can talk about as well.
Yeah.
So another thing to be conscious of is we've talked already about, you want game time to feel like this special time that you're with your kid. You're teaching them, you're being with them. It's this fun thing we get to do together. And that's going to grow as they grow, and they're going to look forward to this fun family time. But that means you do need to be conscious of how much time you have to play a game, because nothing is worse for a kid. I mean, there's probably a few things that are worse for a kid, but in the gaming world, nothing is worse than not getting to finish the game. I know for me and Jared, sometimes we're like, oh, we're too tired, we'll just come back to this tomorrow and it's not a big deal. But for them, there's so much in the moment. I don't know that we've left a game and that they have come back to it, really. I'm trying to think.
We've had times where we like finished it and they were like, we want to play again tomorrow. And we're like, okay, well, we'll leave it set up to play again tomorrow.
Right.
But never leaving a game half-baked.
Right, right. Yeah. And I have before, mostly when they're playing by themselves, because obviously when they pick out their own games, they're not conscious of the fact that they just picked out an hour game when I told them, hey, 10 minutes till lunch, you know. And so I'll say, hey, we got to leave this game out. You can finish it later. But usually by later, they've moved on and they want something else.
Sure.
And so picking a game that you can finish in the amount of time that you have is going to be best, especially because, again, like, I think a lot of families maybe would be doing games at night during a family time before bed. And you don't want to be pushing up against kids' bedtimes. Everybody's getting cranky.
Yep.
Everybody's more on edge. Parents are kind of like, we're ready to be done. Can the kids go to bed already? And because you want the gaming to be a good experience,
sure,
you want to make sure that you're choosing something that can get finished when everybody's still in a good mood and able to finish it.
That's one of the reasons I went ahead and picked up Captain Flip, because it's like this 15-minute push your luck game.
Yeah.
Where it feels like an actual game. You feel like you're building something and then it's over and everybody can put it away, go to bed or whatever the next thing is. But when they're going, Dad, let's play a game, or Mom, come on, let's play a game, you can fulfill the desire of playing a game without it taking 30, 45 minutes plus setup. I think that that is really helpful to have a few of those games ready to go so that you're both being able to hit that demand without too long of a time commitment.
And we've got several of those now that we learned our lesson, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because the little games, like the 2-, 3-, 4-year-old games,
they're all done
in 10 minutes to 30 minutes.
Sure.
But when we got up to 6-, 7-, 8-year-old games, some of those can take an hour and a half.
I'd say an hour. I mean,
Toy Story, the first time y'all played Toy Story.
Well, the first time's not fair.
Took forever. Or Chronicles of Avel. That first time took a really long time.
But that's on that 7-, 8 range where you're like, they can't do it themselves yet, but it's very involved.
Yeah.
I agree. That is on the longer end. But a lot of the games are going to be geared towards the fact that kids' attention spans typically are not longer than 20 to 30 minutes.
It's true. Probably those games are supposed to be an hour and they were just an hour and a half because
we were
trying to involve a 6-year-old in them or like something like that.
Yeah. I mean, even Hope was kind of hanging out on somebody's team.
That's true. So, yeah.
I don't know. I think.
Which that's something that we haven't talked about yet is the idea of being on a team with your child.
Sure.
And that's something that we also have utilized because especially when the kids were young and it was just Faith, you know, we'd play whatever she wanted to play. But when she got older and wanted to play something that was a little bit more advanced and we didn't want to leave our other kids out, that's another thing that we've utilized. We've been like, hey, you can be on mommy's team for this.
Right.
And that usually keeps Hope engaged. I'd still say she peters out after about 30 minutes. She doesn't stay fully focused for those long games. She did stay focused for my little Everdell. And you were kind of asking her, we would kind of ask her each question, like, okay, here's your three choices. Which one do you want to do?
Right.
And having her on somebody's team worked because the text, she couldn't read, you know, this and that. But if we could read it ahead of time and just kind of frame, here's your choices. Another one that it worked really well for was My Little Scythe.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously she's not capable of doing that on her own.
But she enjoyed being on somebody's team because you could easily say, okay, here's your three action choices that you have. What do you want to do? And then we'd go and do it.
Right.
So that's something that we've utilized because then our younger kids can still feel included and frankly are still learning game strategies while they're playing because we're letting them make some of the decisions. We're just kind of simplifying the decision-making process for them by being on their quote unquote team.
Yep.
So.
All right. Last one. And this one is really difficult. So take this one with a grain of salt. But figuring out the correct age range for your child. So obviously publishers give an age recommendation. I don't think publishers are always very good about that. And so you've got to kind of learn what's right for your kid and use some of the other things that we've already talked about. I found some games where they say 12 plus and it's 12 plus just so they get away from whatever legal issue it would be if a small child swallowed a piece.
Yeah, just because there's little pieces. That's the only reason it's 12 plus.
That's not helpful at all.
Yeah.
So
we had a publisher tell us straight up that that's the reason
why
it was 12 plus before.
And I was just like, guys, this is a 6+ game. Like it just is. But because of the pieces, it is what it is. So take it with a grain of salt. I really like using Board Game Geek as a tool for this. There is an age recommendation voted on by players for each game. And so you can kind of get a feel of what the actual age is recommended for a game. But again, every kid's different. You're going to learn what's best for your kid, and then you can kind of go off of that. Well, some of the ones we've already mentioned, Chronicles of Avel, Toy Story, My Little Scythe, our kids play up to the recommendation and instead of being at or above it already. And so,
And I wouldn't say that Joy's strategy is the greatest in My Little Avel, but she understands all of the rules and plays entirely independently for that game.
Sure, absolutely. So it just kind of depends on what you're going for.
Yeah.
Okay, as a middle school or high schooler, I think some of these same things apply. In fact, I treat middle schoolers and high schoolers that come over to play games the same way I do adults. Whenever someone comes over for the first time, I ask them about their interest in life. I ask them some IPs that they're interested in to get an idea. And I kind of get a feel of whether or not they like confrontation. And then once I have that, I can kind of pick through my collection and pick something that I think they're going to enjoy. I'll usually pick something lighter first. Those aspects are still going to come through, even though it's in a lighter game. And it kind of lets you test drive what you've read in the conversation. If that goes well, then you can bring out something heavier within the same genre, ask them what they think, things like that. But I still follow the same kind of theme, interest, time to play, and difficulty based on age and skill level. when I'm interpreting what to get people to the table.
You said we were going to talk about relationships with our parents, father figures and stuff.
We are?
Yeah. You were like, we'll talk about that a little bit later about how to balance that. Because I was saying that I think...
Oh, yeah. You're right.
With my dad, because I had such a good relationship with my dad, I think him beating me was more motivating for me than it was discouraging
for
me.
So I want to ask you about that because I feel like there's at least two trains of thought that I have talked to people about. I have found, especially among adults, I don't even want to really share this.
I don't
give my full effort on my first play when I already know the game.
Yeah.
I want other people to figure it out. I want them to be able to enjoy the experience, and I am praying that one of them wins. Now, obviously, there's just some times where...
Okay, does this apply when you and I play a game
No. This is newer people.
Okay, because you better be trying to beat me the first time we play a game.
I am.
I'm just saying.
I hear you. Yes, I promise. Okay. I don't throw games with you. But when I already know a game and other people at the table don't, especially people who are not as strong in gaming,
yeah,
I will do my best not to just plow over them.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to enjoy that.
Well, I'm remembering a Dead of Winter game that we played with some friends, and it was their first time, and you just happened to be the betrayer as you're trying to teach them the game.
Yeah.
And obviously, you can't just sabotage the game as you're trying to teach it to them. So you acted pretty much like you were on our team
right. The
entire game until the very, very end when you did like one betrayer
thing. And I only did it because I could tell that the game was so far lost.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well...
Yeah, because for those of you that don't know, Dead of Winter is a cooperative game, but it's a semi-cooperative game because one person could be dealt a betrayer card, which means that they're actually on the other side, but you don't know it.
Sure.
But that's not even a guarantee. Sometimes everybody's on the same team.
That's right.
In the game, so.
But the aspect of there could be plays into the game itself.
Yeah.
So that's one line of thinking, and I kind of apply that same line of thinking to kids where I don't play my best. I often will either try a strategy that is not optimal or that I've never tried before, or I'll just kind of hold back because I want them to not only like the game, I want them to have a chance to learn without being beaten into the ground.
Yeah.
So I think there are two different ways to approach that because there is learning in losing, obviously, but there's also learning in being able to have the opportunity to figure it out. So I don't really know where my question is in that. But
well,
I just want to throw that out there.
So as an adult, I think my dad did do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he did because it took forever and ever and ever to beat him at checkers.
Yeah.
But remembering the first game where I did beat him at checkers, I knew 5 years after the fact or whatever, when I got better at checkers, that there was a better move he could have made.
Yeah, okay.
But he knew that I had played well enough. It was the very last little bit. And he was like, okay, she's done a good job, and he made the less optimal move and I won. So yeah. And I think that was the same in Monopoly. So he was beating us in Monopoly and it felt like a long drawn out, just pummeling into the ground, because that's what Monopoly always feels like when you lose.
Oh, sure. Just in general, across the board,
Across the board, that is what Monopoly is. You don't
that's
lose
right.
quickly in Monopoly.
No.
You get your blood drained out of you drop by drop.
Oh man. We're at the kids table.
Oh, whoops. Sorry, you got
nope, it's too far gone
your
now.
Glitter drained out.
Oh my. That's rough. I'm so sorry, everybody.
Don't put that in.
Oh, it's staying.
No, don't do it. Oh, what was I saying with my
I don't know, man. Something about stuff being drained out of you. No, I hear what you're saying though, about as a kid it felt like he was pummeling you into the ground. But
looking back as an adult, I know that he didn't actually use the best strategy. And
I'll do that too. Like, well, I'm not going to
just... And when we learned his strategy, he would up his strategy.
Sure.
And so he was teaching us strategy through what he was doing while he was playing.
I think I do that too, but I do like to let them win every once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, man, Joy in particular just is
She's so competitive. Oh man, she cries.
I feel like she would go nuts if she never won a game. And
she goes nuts if she doesn't win every game, frankly.
Well, she's getting better.
She is. We're working on it.
But I just think it's something to consider. I want to respect them as people and treat them the same way I would treat new gamers as adults. But I also want to teach them because I know that they're committed to learning more about this, and they want to get better, and I want them to get better. So there is a challenging aspect as well.
Well, and one thing that we started doing with our kids after a game was done is we would talk with them about the strategy they used. I remember doing this with my little Scythe and with my little Everdell, where, like I mentioned earlier, Joy, our middle daughter, did not have the best strategy with Everdell. She loved it because it's that fantasy art stuff. Like, she loved it. She wanted to play it all the time, but she would go for just the big cards. And that was all she wanted to save for, was just the big cards. Or she'd go for the aesthetic cards. She'd be like, oh, my treehouse needs this, because that would be super cool in a treehouse.
Sure.
And wasn't thinking about bigger picture strategy. So when she would get frustrated over losing, we were able to say, well, sweetie, you see, you went for these big cards, which were really cool, but Faith went for the cards that gave her those four of a kind, which let her get the parade, which gave her extra points.
And, or someone built an engine and everything became cheaper in the back half of the game.
Yeah, like, could you think of a way that you could have done something like that? And so then in future games, we would remind her, yes, you could go for this card, or if you went for this card, then you would get four little mouse heads and you'd get a parade. That sounds grosser than it is.
We're on a roll tonight.
They're cute little mouse faces.
You're not
collecting animal heads in my little effort.
This is rough. Incredible.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to edit this, future Jared. Okay.
Feeling okay?
It's so late.
Yeah, we got this.
We got this.
All right.
No. I'm going to finish
it. You're
going
to finish it.
But yeah, because I think that watching other people's strategy and learning from it, or even developing their own strategy and thinking, okay, this one didn't work, let me try this one next time, is something that, at least for our kids at the ages that they are, we have had to help them think along those lines, help them see, hey, this person did this and it got them this. Isn't that cool? Or, hey, you did this time and focused only on this one goal, and that didn't work as well as this other person that focused on all three at the same time.
Sure.
And so that's another aspect of something that we've done with our kids that I think has helped.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was a fun topic. Thanks for reminding me to put that in.
Yeah.
And I think with middle and high schoolers, I would treat it the same way. Like, mm-hmm. I think that, like I said, I want to treat everybody at the table fairly and make sure they're having a good time. I think that's the biggest thing that's evolved in my gaming career, quote unquote, is when I first started, I was so focused on winning the game. I wanted so badly to be awesome at board gaming.
Yeah, that you forced me to lie that one time.
Oh my gosh, let it go. But no, I mean, I was so intent on showing myself that I could win at games, that I would, that's all I would get wrapped up in. But as I've gotten older and as I've played more games and as I've hosted more game nights, I'm more interested in making sure everybody at the table is having a good time. And I want the game to facilitate that, because I don't know. I'm not a big just sit down and talk person. I like having a thing that we're doing together and then we talk while we're doing the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think games really facilitate that well, but it doesn't facilitate that well if you're not creating an atmosphere at the table where everyone feels like they're welcome, they're feeling like they can tackle the thing in front of them and engage you at the same time. So I think being aware of that, especially with your kids, is very important, or somebody else's kids. Definitely don't be nice to other people's kids.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on.
All right.
Publishers that we would recommend.
Haba.
Without a doubt.
Definitely. Haba has this wonderful way where they just put ages on their games, and their games go all the way down to 2 years old. So they've got many, actually, games that go down
to
2 years old.
We're
not going to list all of them, but we have played My First Orchard. We've played Hungry Hungry Bear. Those are the two that are off the top of my head.
There was another fishing game that I can't remember the name of it, because we passed it on to another parent, but that was
fishy, something fishy.
Yeah.
But that one was a little bit too complicated for 2 years old. because you're fishing for the fish, you're getting it, you're matching the color, and then you're putting the color in your puzzle.
Sure.
And that was a little bit too many steps. So,
probably closer to three.
Yeah. That was a good one, but it wasn't as early as we could play the Hungry Hungry Bear in My First Orchard. But I mean, you can go to 3-year-old games, then you can go to 4-year-old games, then you can go to 5-year-old games. So I remember we would have this backlog of Haba that we were so excited to give them for their birthday because, hey, what better way to get a kid excited about a game than it's their birthday present? And
yeah,
then
right.
It's this special thing that they get to do with mom and dad. And it really just, they take ownership for it. Or and at least we found that with our kids.
Yeah. And we always visit Haba when we go to Gen Con and stuff like that and spend a good amount of time there because there's so many choices for kids games. And I don't think you can go wrong, but it allows you to go back to that list of like, okay, what are my kids going to be into?
Yep.
What's the different thing that they haven't tried lately as far as mechanics and that sort of thing? Going back to My First Orchard for just a second, that is probably the closest that I can say someone can get to replacing Candyland. If you're just dead set on not doing Candyland, My First Orchard incorporates color, incorporates taking turns. There's not as much of a path.
No,
and
there's not a path.
It is cooperative.
Because you're just color matching and taking the fruit off the trees. But yeah.
If you want to get down to that 2-year-old level and not deal with Candyland, I think that's going to get you close. And the cooperative aspect is also going to make it a little easier to teach instead of feeling like you're competing against this child that can't read. But so that would be just one thing I would mention. But yes, Haba has a great lineup. I would highly recommend it. I don't know that there's just a game that stands out above the rest for them. I think a lot of them are really good. And so whatever speaks to you and your family, I think would definitely be a hit.
One thing with Haba, though, is their primary focus is kids' games.
Yes.
And so they are pumping out kids' games right and left. Mm-hmm. And so we do have to be discerning when we go through Haba because, I mean, their games are great, but we want to make sure we're getting a game. I mean, just like anyone, kids can only play so many games. I mean, if we flood them, they're just going to still have their, you know, 6 favorites and not really play the rest of them as much. So going by Haba, we have to make sure what niche is this filling?
Yep.
That I remember this year at Gen Con, I was thinking our kids don't have a really great deduction game yet.
Mm.
So I went to Haba specifically thinking, okay, let me find if there's a good deduction game that Haba can do. Cause that's an area that we haven't explored as much in gaming. So that's something to say too, is you can get really excited seeing, oh my goodness, this is a game for a 2-year-old, and then get 5 of them. And I think you'd be a lot better to do your research and get 3 of them that taught some different gaming components so you don't overwhelm your kid.
Truthfully, it feels the exact same as when you started building your collection for the first time, where
it's
you're like, holy smokes, there's 10,000 games. I want to buy all of them. And then you're like, I don't know that I actually do need all of them because a lot of them overlap.
It's true. Or you do buy all of them, and 5 years later, you're like, why have I never even played these 10
That's
games?
Right.
And then you have to
Is
sell
this
them.
Seriously still in shrink wrap?
I know.
it's the exact same. Just pick and choose.
Be discerning.
Don't feel like you're missing out. Like, there's a lot of good ones. Just pick the ones that speak to you and do try and find variety. I mean, unless you just really want them all, and then, hey, you know, whatever. I ain't judging. One of the first companies that we ran across 1 year at a convention that had some games that really, really enjoyed, especially for the younger kids, was Pegasus Spiel. Did we even have kids when we ran into them? Were you pregnant with Faith?
I think I was. Yes, I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And we came across their booth at Gen Con and it was amazing. It was so amazing. There were all these kids games, and I didn't know that kids games could do that, really, because I'd only seen, you know, Candyland and Go Fish or whatever. So Jared and I went back, and I remember we did, actually. We were like, okay, we're going to buy this one for 2 years old, this one for 3 years old, and we gave our sweet first daughter games for her birthday, like, every single year for the first 5 years.
Yep.
But it was good. They are a German-based company and have won a lot of awards in Germany for their children's games. Best children's game of the year.
Right.
Many, many different years. They have excellent games.
Yeah, we had really good experience with them. Just a few that I'll rattle off that we ended up getting for our kids. Bouncing Bunnies was a good 3-year-old game. Ladybug Costume Party is a good 4-year-old game. I will say with that one, if your kids put stuff in their mouths, do not get Ladybug costume because it has a lot of small pegs. And then
it's fun though. I mean, the deduction required by Ladybug costume party was challenging for me.
No, it was
when
it
we
was
first
cool.
started playing.
Yeah,
and still
it was
is
a fun
sometimes.
Little game.
Yeah. So it's fun.
I will just make a point here. And this is us learning from our mistake. You don't have to buy a game to hold for 5 years for your kid.
They're going to have more games in 5 years.
We got really excited. Faith was our oldest, our first kid. And we were just like, we got to buy these games. I mean, she's going to need games. And they have made so many more games for 4 and 5 year olds.
But we have used all the ones we bought.
We have.
And they were very fun.
We have done that. I will agree. But I'm just saying you don't have to do that. One more that I'll mention is Blue Orange Games. They have a wide catalog as well. I don't know that I need to deep dive into them in the same way that I didn't need to deep dive into Haba because there are a lot of different choices. We like Blue Orange for a lot of their games that are a little bit older in that 8 range as well, but definitely would recommend them as another publisher to go and check out. There are a lot of other publishers that have a few kids games. So like obviously Stonemaier mostly does adult games, but they do have My Little Scythe. Another one is a Lucky Duck Games does the Kids Chronicles, but that's their primary kids game. So, I mean, if you have a particular game that you like, there might be a kids version of that game. That's becoming a very popular thing to do.
Yeah. Or they'll have kids versions of games that'll scale, which is really nice. A lot of them are starting to do that where your kid could play at a lower level with less strategy. You could play at a higher level and have more strategy. And for those of you that are like, my goodness, I'm playing Candyland, I could be playing Twilight Imperium, it satisfies a little bit of that itch, you know, where, okay, I'm playing with my kid, but I've still got a real game going on here.
That's right.
Now, I will say, I have not found a scaling game that goes younger than 6 or so.
No. Right. You're not going to scale.
You're not
down
talking
to 3.
About the ones that go all the way down to preschool. Most of them still require reading, still require basic understanding. So just as a note, as we were talking about those.
Sure. All right. One more thing I wanted to mention quickly. Inevitably, kids will want to play your games. They will want to transition to the bigger games. Now, fortunately, there are some games, like Anna just mentioned, that do scale well. It's one of the things that you and I applauded on a 2-tap episode about Gnome Hollow, having all kinds of ability to scale lower, higher. Chronicles of Light does the same thing.
Yep.
So there are games
like
that.
Well, and we're going to talk about My Little Alchemist next month.
That's true.
For the kids
which
episode.
Which also scales well.
That scales, has more scale levels than any other game we've come across so far, actually.
Yep.
So.
But I would say if they want to transition into the quote unquote bigger games, there's a couple different things that we've tried with, I would say, mixed success. We have tried modifying rules, simplifying them down. We did that with Wingspan for school.
Yep.
And that went okay, mm-hmm. I felt like.
Yeah.
Obviously, co-ops help. If you're playing a cooperative game, you can teach them through that, and you're not working against them. You can, again, try new strategies that you can balance that out a little bit when you're getting them into bigger games. But I have told my kids no on several of the games they want to play with me because I know they're not ready for it.
Yeah.
And
they would just get discouraged.
You don't want to discourage them with those bigger games. Continue to scale them up at the right rate. And it will take time. But before you know it, we'll be playing big games. They're going to kick your butt. And then you're going to say, whoa, what happened? And that's kind of been what I've seen both with my own kids and with other kids that I've worked with.
It's true. Yeah. And I mean, I'd say a lot of the times that you're giving yourself a handicap, they don't even know about it. So I know sometimes you won't give yourself starting resources, but you'll give them starting resources, or you'll have another aspect of the goal that you're trying to work towards that you haven't given them. And so there's some other ways to do that. And having somebody on our team, we already had talked about that too, which I feel like helps.
I would agree. Anna, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I'd say closing thoughts. So we've been talking a lot about what your kids enjoy, how to figure out what your kids enjoy, how to spend time with them. I'd say for closing thoughts, pick games that you think you're going to enjoy too. So
that's fair.
Yeah. Because again, I think Jared really nailed it a little bit early on when he was talking about how when he comes to the table, his primary goal now is build community, help everybody have a good time and feel more connected. And that is, especially if you're playing with your own kids or with a niece or nephew that you only get to see a couple times a year or whatever. Right. And it's a special thing with aunt or uncle so-and-so. Really, the goal is connection. And you're both going to connect better if you're both having a good time.
Yep.
And so, I mean, if the kid loves Candyland, but you're like, I cannot stand Candyland, suggest something else that you think the kid's going to love and that you're going to love too. Because I think the kids can tell when you're bored or when you're checked out. And that's the last thing that you want, because games are supposed to be connective.
Yeah, I would agree. My only pushback on that is going back to the Candyland discussion at the beginning and understanding that you can set aside the 20 minutes. This is my challenge to some of my friends who have pushed back against me on this and other people who I know are thinking about it. So forgive me if I'm coming off as a challenging person right now, but you can set aside the 20 minutes knowing that you're building a foundation to have a great gaming relationship later on. I know that it's boring. I acknowledge that. There have been times where I've just sat there and been like, what are we doing right now? As my kid just kind of moves their piece wherever along the board. And I'm just like, holy smokes, this is never going to work. And it's going to feel like it's never going to work. But I promise you.
Like, oh no,
yeah,
my kid's a lost cause. But then they get it.
But then they get it. Yeah. And it 100%, I'm telling you, if I could do it again, I would do it the exact same way.
Me too. Yeah, for sure.
Cool. I would just say, keep in mind, like anything else, and I'm having to learn this teaching our kids soccer right now. All this is going to take time. It's not going to fix itself overnight and they're ready to play heavy games by Sunday. But if you stick it out, put the time in, have really positive attitude, find those games that both you and your kids can enjoy, in the long run, it's going to really be something beautiful that you get to experience with your kid.
Yeah.
And so I really hope that some of this discussion has been helpful. I don't know that we've said anything revolutionary, but this is our experience, and we hope that it's helpful in you getting to have your own experiences with your kids at the table. So with that, thank you for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I totally get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com or shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. All of those links are in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for her cover art and to Anna Snyder who made the music. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
See you later. And I'm serious. Oh, did you already stop it? And I'm really serious too, though, about, like, I really kind of hope that we could get some conversation going, because if we've got other parents on that game with their kids and you feel like we missed something, or you feel like there's a strategy that would be really good, or we've got parents that have tried certain things and are frustrated, let's talk about it, because I know we all want to have this good experience and help our kids love things that we love. So let's help each other out.
Absolutely. We don't feel like we have all the answers. Again, we're just sharing from our experience.